106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the movie calendar. My name is Lee.
And my name is Terrence.
And what is on your face?
We're on a mission from God.
We are not. Actually, you know what? I didn't tell Terrence about this.
You said you didn't have any.
I know, I lied.
Yeah, let's do the whole...
It's the only time in my life that I've ever lied.
Okay. What are we here talking about today?
We are here today to talk about the fantastic 1980 comedy classic Blues Brothers. Incredible film. For those of you listening on your favorite podcast app of choice, we have a YouTube version as well. The joke that we kind of made at the beginning is we are wearing... the sunglasses from the film. Not the exact ones.
Not even the ones that are like it. They're just sunnies.
No, this was a free pair from a friend of mine that I've had for like 6 years.
And these ones were about $8 to $10 from a large department store.
Did you buy those specifically to do this morning?
No. My wife bought them specifically because my other ones were lost and broken or both or neither.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'll put them there. I do want to say that I would like to dedicate the episode that we're about to do today to my father. This is a film that the two of us would watch together, and re-watching this recently to get ready for this episode is something that I really, really enjoyed doing. I was watching the whole thing with a big smile on my face and just had big memories, and it was really beautiful, and there's a lot connected to this. So this one's for Dad. That's on a personal note from me. But I hope this goes well. We better do a good episode this time.
I think we're going to be doing it justice.
It's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to talking about it.
Thank you, Terrence. That's very sweet. Yeah. I have really fond memories for this film as well. My father was the one who introduced me into the world of the Blues Brothers and Jake and Elwood. And yeah, I had very similar feelings going back to it, rewatching it. It's so much fun to just be in this world with these characters, and we are going to get into all of that. Mm-hmm. Full disclosure, before we get too deep into it, we are recording a little bit earlier than normal, so there's probably going to be a bit of traffic noise in the background. Unfortunately, we have no control over that. And also, right before we started recording, one of the walls on this room that we're currently sitting in had a bit of an accident, and one of the blinds fell down in the most loud crash that I think I've ever heard before. So if it's kind of precariously hanging back up in the wall. I don't have the tools to kind of drill it back in. So if that falls again, you'll hear it, and that's what it is, and we will run. Yeah. So just full disclosure about that, but hopefully it doesn't happen.
We will run. You make it sound like it's a 50-meter tall thing that's going to tip onto us.
Yeah,
scare the living daylights out of us.
We'll probably edit it out if it does, but we will reference it because you will see the first cut ever in a Movie Cal episode. So
cool. Well, not really. I think there have been some sneaky ones, but...
so the way that we're going to be breaking down this episode is we are going to be talking about the world building, the characters, and you cannot talk about the Blues Brothers without talking about the music.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to get into before going into our regular scheduled programming of hashtag what about when, and then adding the film to the movie calendar. We have a really good date. Do we have honorable mentions for this episode?
We have at least one honorable mention for this episode.
Perfect.
Oh man, I can't even remember the date.
That's okay. You got plenty of time to look it up. We are not there yet. I'm sure that I will talk for long enough at some point during this episode that you'll be able to look up when that particular day is.
Yep. I can't believe it. I didn't even write it down, but I've been talking about it the whole time prior to the record.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was either. That's okay.
I think I do, but I won't get it wrong. Yeah, you'll know what it is.
If you get it wrong, it doesn't matter because we're not putting the film on that date anyway.
Honorable mention, every other day.
Yeah, every other day of the year. But now I'm ready to jump straight in.
Yep.
If it's your first time here, if this is a film that you love, thank you for joining us. Subscribing is super helpful. If you can leave a like as well, that's really helpful. Give us a review, any feedback you can. We've got all of our links down in the description below to all of our socials. We are at The Movie Cal everywhere. Our email is themoviecal@gmail.com, and we have a website, themoviecalendar.com. Time codes down there as well if you want to jump around to your favorite bit.
Yep, and find us on the podcast app of your choice if you are watching us and seeing us. We're there. Hello.
I would love to jump straight into the world building.
Go.
So
jump.
For me, if I jump down, I will freak out.
Don't jump up. Yeah, I can't even adjust my seat. Every little movement, we both like...
We're like concreted into the end of our seats right now. Concrete boots, don't move. But this film is so clever with its world building. And it all comes down to the writing. So this script, in case you weren't aware, was written by Dan Aykroyd. And it was then sort of chipped away and whittled down by John Landis so that it was filmable, because the script that he was given was like 300 and something pages long. And if that doesn't sort of mean anything to you, if you're not sure how big scripts are, it's usually a minute per page is how long kind of scripts are, give or take, obviously. Okay. But yeah, so a 300 minute film would have just been ridiculous.
You can easily fix that. Just put it in a smaller font.
Yeah, true. That's how that
works.
That's
my fix for everything.
Wow.
Ridiculous. Or a bigger font if you're in school and putting together an essay.
But yeah, like how would you, besides comedy, how would you define like the genre of this film?
Oh man, you could almost put it as musical, except music is used for music, not for storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, they don't sing their prose. Is that the right way to say that?
No, they are prose. They're all professional musicians.
Man, Lee, you can't pull those things off as well as I can. Don't even try.
I think there's a fly right behind me. Here.
Did you organize this fly?
Yeah, just to annoy you.
Not left us alone. I don't know. How amazing is it? How professional they are? How good a singer John Belushi is?
It blew me away.
Great a performance they both put on their dancing.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would call this. Comedy.
Musical. There's so many... like fantastical elements to it.
Yeah.
Like this film does not exist in the real world. There is a very much a heightened reality to it all.
Physics.
Yeah. And they're very much in the physics and in the indestructibility of all of the characters.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get into all of that. So that's all in world building, right? They kick it off really early on when, you know, Jake gets out of prison and his brother picks him up in a police car. And yeah, they're driving through. And they get to the bridge, the giant drawbridge, and yeah, they just jump over the top, and you instantly know, okay, this movie's going to be crazy. Like they're not caring about reality. It's the comedy's going to come from the obscene and the insane.
And this is the moment where, as a kid watching this, you see the car jump over this this opening bridge, this drawbridge at the height of its draw.
Yeah,
did you say that?
At its peak.
And you think as a kid, oh man, I want to drive a car as soon as I can so that I can jump over bridges like that. And we don't have many of those types of bridges here in Australia, but I was looking everywhere. Honestly, as a kid driving around everywhere, whenever we drove past some sort of large river, I would hope that we were going to cross it to see if it was a drawbridge. And then I wondered always, I wonder if this car could do it.
Yeah, no, well, you can't unless you've got that specific model of magic police car, because it's magic, right? I love the fact that it's just never explained all of the stuff that this car can do, and I'm sure we'll get into some of those moments in What About When.
Yep.
But yeah, I love that it's just not explained. Apologies for the fly.
If I catch it, you will know. You will know. The magic is not just to the car, the magic is to Jake and Elwood as well.
Yep.
They are indestructible.
Yes.
A la Jules and Vince, Pulp Fiction. They just avoid most. Well, they avoided one incident.
Vincent wasn't so indestructible in a particular scene in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, not a particular one, but man, a hail of bullets. And similarly with these two, phone booth explosion, house coming down around them.
It's like $7 of quarters here.
And how good is every time they just move out of the destruction,
yeah,
they always comment on something. Oh, $7 a quarter. Oh, we're late. We better get going. I can't remember the other ones, but they always... That was the beauty of it.
Yeah, when the rubble
of nonsense
of the apartment sort of collapses on top of them, and then they just get up and dust themselves off like nothing's happened. And they're like, oh yeah, we've got to go.
Yeah.
When the front entrance to the house gets exploded, and they just again get up out of the bricks and just try to fix the door, and off they go. It's really fun. I love that. All that
door falls off the hinges. Surprised the building stayed standing after that.
Yeah, right.
How many blasts?
Even like when they go and see the penguin.
Yeah.
I was gonna say for the first time, but it's the only time we kind of see this character.
Yes.
The woman who you know, quote unquote, raised them. In the orphanage, and she's just the way that the doors open and close on their own, and And she, when she's casting them out down the stairs and she just floats backwards, is hilarious. I love it.
Yeah, it's cool. I love Jake's, Joliet Jake's fall down the stairs with the desk. He's still in, and I'm thinking, wow, that stunt guy really took a beating in that one.
That was not John Belushi.
There were no fancy cuts in that. They showed him all the way down falling inside one of these old school desks. That would have hurt.
Yeah.
A lot, I reckon. Oh, that's what makes them pros.
It's 80s filmmaking, right? That they cared, obviously, but there were a lot of accidents that happened on early film sets and probably on this one as well.
Yeah. So Magic World.
Yeah, so it's a magic world, and I love that. Yeah, they use it to create the comedy. Like they get such good comedic value out of the fact that they have made the decision to make this world fantastical, and they always use it for that. So whether it's throwing 1,000 cars, you know, off an embankment, or creating pile up of cars anywhere you can, which this film broke the record for the most cars crashed a film. Ever. I think it was 103 or 108 cars were destroyed in the making of this film.
But that's one thing that it's famously known for as well, right? Of its time since then, other films have pipped it and beat it and doubled it, you know? But yeah, absolutely. And the high fall, the death that you would want all members of the Nazi party
in the car.
Yeah, just continues to plummet. Love that.
Yeah.
Love
it. Goodbye. You can die now.
Yeah, but it's such a fantastical way to do it. Not just fall off and land. This car, I can't even remember. How would they have got this shot? They would have flown it.
They took a helicopter. Up and they released it. There were so many things that they had to get access to be able to do that.
Mm.
They had to prove that they could do it without it
veering,
floating off, and
it was
hitting a building.
It was
in the city. Yeah, it's crazy.
It was from above high-rise buildings. You see the high-rises in the background.
I don't know how they did it.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Gorgeous practical shot, right? There's no CG there.
Well, that's it. None of this is... All this is practical. It's all got to be practical.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So, yeah, I love the magic car, cool. Like the car chase back to Chicago with just an unfathomable amount of police vehicles in pursuit of them, as well as everyone else who's... you know, chasing them down as well.
Hut.
Yeah,
SWAT at the end. And all of them coming down, abseiling down the...
yeah, it's excellent.
It's good.
Do you have anything else around the world building that you wanted to jump into?
I
know that
specifically
there is one thing that you want to talk about in What About When that you mentioned to me with Cab Calloway. That's a world building element, because when it goes into Minnie the Moocher, all their costumes change and the set change. Yeah. Using it to that effect.
Yeah. I think the music is part of the world where they break out into song, not just when they're on stage, but when they go to Ray's Music Exchange, and when they go pick up, is it Mike? Magic, not Magic Mike, the guitarist. I forget his name, but Aretha. His old lady starts singing Think.
You better think about what you're doing.
Yeah. You know, I love those elements. I like how they do use the songs to tell the story. So that was when I was saying they don't use music for prose. Well, these are elements where they do. Well, that one was anyway.
Yeah.
But it was nice how they slotted in. They're recorded artists, they're actual songs, and it's a perfect spot to put it in. I like that element of it. The hooker. John Lee Hooker?
Yes, correct. Boom, boom.
Sitting out on the street, boom, just singing. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, man.
Incredible. So that was...
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the music in its own thing.
But in terms of the world building,
I
think that had a lot to do with it. Just they wanted to bring as much soul as they could into this.
Yeah.
And having those performances be used throughout the story was also a big part of setting the vibe for it all.
And just them being able to get away with... wearing these suits and sunnies and hats and looking as cool as they do. And are you from the FBI? No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Oh, it's so good. Driving through shopping centers and causing havoc.
Oh, shopping center. I should have had that as a What About When.
Yeah.
That is such a fun scene of them. Yeah, you want to get out of this parking lot? All right. You got a Miss Piggy? Smack, straight through the wall.
And talking about the shops. Oh, look.
Yeah, they got everything here.
I love that.
Brilliant.
That's a great scene. So stupid.
Yeah.
But hilarious.
Exactly what it is. But it's so much fun. And you can just... it's so warm and welcoming if you just open yourself up to it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you have to stretch to do that, because the film is just so accessible for you to be able to just completely let it wash over you.
Mm-hmm.
I love cinema like this. It's so, so lovely. Good comedies. We want good comedies. Bring them back.
Yep.
The characters.
Mm.
Do you want to talk about the characters?
Well, look, obviously, Jake and Elwood, the two leads.
Yep.
I do love how they share this. There's no one lead. There's no support. They're equal lead in my book.
Yeah. Well, it's called The Blues Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were discussing earlier, I was doing a little ask, do you reckon they're meant to be brothers? And we both kind of went, yeah, the Blues Brothers, blues. But then Lee, rightly so, says, yeah, but by birth. Yeah, because they probably met in the orphanage, right?
They could have, yeah. They might not have the same parents, but that doesn't necessarily make a brother. Like, what is a brother you start coming up with?
Of course. But, you know, they're known as Jake and Elwood Blues.
Yep.
So whether they've created this alias for themselves as a family, you know, we're brothers, this is our surname now, or whether that was just the band name, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is that they're known as this.
Yes.
They're known as Joliet Jake and Elwood. I don't know if he had the name. Obviously, he wouldn't have had the name Joliet before he went in.
No, that would have Joliet been
Correctional Center, which I found out through the credits. I thought Joliet was just a name for prison.
No, it's a specific
correctional facility. yeah, very old school looking. That was cool.
Yeah, some of the shots in that prison are great. Well, we'll talk about Jake. We'll kick it off with the fantastic, irreplaceable John Belushi,
mm-hmm.
Who was gone well before his time should have taken him.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching a few clips on YouTube of the SNL sketches that inspired the Blues Brothers. Because if you weren't aware, the Blues Brothers is based off a Saturday Night Live sketch from New York City. Both of these two leads were SNL alums, and they had these two characters before they made the film, which is just so much fun. So they did that. Look up some of their old... you can see a few of their old songs from their openings of SNL. And they've got the whole band with them as well, like Donald Duck Dunn and Mike.
Steve Cropper.
Yeah, everyone's there.
Yeah. And we watched a couple just before as well. Like, I had no idea that they were a full, complete, actual band before the film, and that they released an album before the film.
Yeah.
So the film was 1980, and this album was 78.
Yeah, they became so successful because of this joke that they ended up taking it seriously and made an album, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, and they're meant to be CIA agents, are they? Or Secret Service or something?
I think the suit started off as a gag on the show where they were, Secret Service to the President of the United States. I don't remember exactly what the joke was, but I read that somewhere, and I tried to track down the sketch, and I couldn't find it.
Let us know if you know what it is. Shoot a comment.
Yeah, let us know. That'd be
great.
And
a link, if you have a link to it, that'd be cool to watch.
Yes, please. But Jake, we meet, who's in prison, he's getting out, and we get the first of many great cameos in the film of the officer who's giving him back all of his stuff that he checked in with.
Yeah.
And you know who it was?
Yeah, I do. Frank Oz.
Yeah, the great Frank Oz,
mm-hmm.
Which is why there's a Muppet reference in the film a little bit later on.
What's the Muppet reference? I didn't pick up it's the reference.
Do you have a Miss Piggy?
So
that's in reference to Frank Oz. Apparently John Landis really likes putting directors and creatives in his films.
No, unfortunately there are no well-known directors in this film.
No, hardly one.
Yeah, hardly, just maybe one. I can't pick him.
No
idea. Might be revealed through this.
I didn't pick it until I read it and then went back and watched the scene, and then, I was like, oh my gosh, of course it's him.
Yeah. Yeah, because he doesn't even look like he's such a young version of him. You're like, wait a second, is it really?
But it's crazy.
So good, so good. So
we'll get to that when we talk about maybe adding the film to the calendar. Who knows?
I know that, you know, through preparing to record this episode, speaking with people in my circles, I know that a lot of people have not even seen this film. Okay, a lot of people in my circles are all where I work, and they're all quite young. Sorry, everyone at work, but compared to me, yes. And they're all like, no, I haven't seen that yet. So I know a lot of people will not know what we're talking about. But those that have seen this, it might be a number of years since you've seen it, and you may not, in fact, know what we're talking about. So go watch it again.
If this episode gets someone to watch The Blues Brothers who hasn't seen it before and they enjoy it, it'll be well worth sitting down and doing this with you, because it is a great one that everyone should watch. But no, I love... I love the character of Jake. Coming out of prison, he's obviously got a chip on his shoulder. He's happy to see his brother, obviously.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, the first kind of conversation we have is just, what is this? What is this car? The car. Where's the Bluesmobile, man? Where's our ride? Where's our wheels? It's like, I traded it for a microphone. It's like, oh yeah.
I can see that.
I can see that.
So good. You get the priorities. You're like, yeah. Oh, these they want to be serious musos. Or at least they were one day. Yeah, and I love that as well.
He's obviously, he's a little bit more like off the hip than his brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he talks back to the Penguin.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, he got done for robbing a joint. You never really know what he got in prison for. They say that he was holding up a gas station to pay for like everyone's bill on the band, but he lies so much that, is that really true? Probably not.
But then you could see how that absolutely could be true.
Yes, because he's very loyal.
The gig, the good old boys, and the way they get out of their gig with the good old boys, yeah, you could easily hold up a shop. You would easily break laws to just get a little bit of cash and just run away. I could see that being him. But yeah, he's definitely the bad boy of the two.
Oh yeah, very much so. When they go to Soul Food or Southern Food, when they go to see Aretha Franklin.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the.
I'm not too sure of what it was called either. A lot of the shops have joke names as well. Did you notice the shop that Carrie Fisher's character?
Yes, is called? I wrote it down.
Yeah,
I can't remember something. Cut and curl up and die.
Curl up and die. DYE. Yeah. Very funny. The nail salon.
Yeah,
hair and nail salon. Very clever.
I noticed that. I didn't notice that with all the other ones, though. They do. They even do a street shot. I reckon they're all real street signs, though, with the John Lee Hooker scene outside of Ray's Music Exchange.
Very clever.
They do some nice scenic street shots, how busy the street is and the whole community feel of it, which was really pivotal to that scene coming together. And you get this real cool community vibe and how much music is a part of people's lives.
Yeah, they always stop and look. Like the Blues Brothers always admire what's happening in the music world on the outside, which is really cool. Yeah, I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, when they're in that restaurant diner, and he orders 4 fried chickens and a Coke.
Yep.
And then, yeah, plain white toast for the brother. Tells you everything you kind of need to know about these two boys and what their priorities are. And I love it.
I wonder if that's what they order or if that's just a thing. Because he's like, what do they order for fried chicken? And he knows him by that. Or if that's just a joke order that Jake always does.
No, I think that he would have genuinely sat down and ate those.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
You're probably right. Yeah. It makes me happy to visualize that.
The character or John Belushi, I think, would have sat down and ate those.
Yep.
I mean, he's such a good actor. I need to go back and watch some more of his stuff.
Yeah, a little bit of Animal House.
Yep.
Haven't seen
Animal House.
You know what? Neither have I.
Yep. So I don't know what it's like. It's probably a little bit problematic now.
Yeah.
Going back to watching it in this day and age might be a little bit odd, but I want to see him do more stuff because he is brilliant in this movie.
Well, a lot of the SNL crew, especially the early days, the Lampoon style, this is this kind of crosses into mainstream comedy. It has, and I guess that's what SNL did. It brought Lampoon style humor, which is just crude, into people's homes. And I think Blues Brothers, while it was quite crude at times, had this nice element of nearly family vibe as well. That was the crazy thing about this. At the end of the film, it's rated R. Now, this is rated R for the States in 1980. So obviously ratings and things have changed, but, I could easily sit and watch this with my kids.
Yeah.
I don't see this as any particularly vulgar sections or anything. And Jake is probably the most fearful character that I'd watch. And I was watching him very intently going, what is he going to drop here? He was quite tame. It was really nice watching him and watching his relationship with his brother. It was great. I was always wondering if there was going to be any kind of... if they were going to be abrasive towards each other. And they never, ever were. I like that, and they never were. And I thought, if anything, it was going to come from Jake.
Yeah.
Man, those cars are relentless, aren't they?
That's a good point. I didn't really think about that. Normally, I pick up on stuff like that. I love supportive characters of each other. Mm. I think it's maybe because they're on such a mission, right? They're on a mission from God to save their orphanage. There's no time for that. Their focus is to get the band back together.
Yep.
When he sees the light It's like
in that James Brown sermon.
Oh, the James Brown is so good. The James Brown. James Brown is so fantastic.
He could be the James Brown. That's all right. You can give him that title.
Oh, so incredible. But yeah, when he has that moment, it's like, this is the band. We have to put the band back together. And then, that is it. That is what their goal is, and they do it.
Yeah.
Oh, incredible. I love seeing John Belushi on stage performing for the crowd at the end.
Mm.
Not in the jail. His feet move
so quick.
Yeah. With the cartwheel onto the stage,
yeah.
I honestly thought that it was a stunt double. And because they do a cut of him landing in front of the microphone.
Behind, the shot is behind him when you see him
kind of do the cartwheel.
Jump up. Yeah.
Which it might well have not been him, I don't know. But when I went back and watched the SNL sketches of them doing the songs at the opening, he does the cartwheel on stage. Oh. And I'm like, oh, okay, it was probably him.
Wow. I think the dancing is unbelievable. I think as a larger man, to move like that, I'm not going to say I'm the fittest person in the world, but I have trouble moving like that.
Yeah.
With my feet like that. And Dan Aykroyd as well. The little foot shuffle that he does.
Incredible.
I mean, it's the only way he runs. The only way he dances.
Yeah, the sweat must have been very real.
The church scene was awesome. When he jumps down, he realizes it's a sign. We're putting the band back together.
Yeah.
And he shuffles down the aisle. No, he backflips down the aisle.
Yeah, that's not John Belushi. that is somebody else.
That's him. I'm going to say that's him.
Definitely not. Not even a little bit. Sorry.
I reckon a little bit.
But no, do you want Elwood?
Yeah, okay, let's move to Elwood. Bit of the straight character.
Yep.
He's managed to hold down a house or a apartment or a part of apartment.
It's or it's a spot like a, to put like a bed. It's like a walk-in closet, I think. Yeah. It's tiny. Hey, it's my bed.
It's so funny, that little space. But what's scary is I would imagine that there are places like that in... Is it Brooklyn? Where are they living? I don't know. Where is Chicago? It's Chicago.
Yeah. Hugely Chicago vibes in this one.
Yeah, sorry. That was a faux pas. Of course, I know it's Chicago. I was thinking Queens. That's what I was thinking. Because a lot of movies where I see Queens, there are these over-the-top railway. I could be totally wrong with that too. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, it's the
I've not been there to that part of the state. What are they
called? Yeah, like above ground, like subway things.
Yeah.
They have a specific name. I wrote it down.
Elevator.
Elevator train.
Elevator train.
Thank you.
Because he told me before we were talking about a different scene. I'm like, what are you talking about? Elevator, what?
You said elevator train? I must have said elevator train. Elevated.
Oh, elevated. That makes so much sense now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the trains don't go up and down.
No.
Like that. Elevated train. I don't know what I was talking about. Oh, yeah. His little apartment. Elwood's little apartment. So, he's responsible.
Yeah.
He pays rent.
He's more of the follower, I'd say, between the two of them. But also, obviously not afraid to break the law. Like, when they get pulled over by the police. And he's like, oh, I bet they've got SCMODs. Like, what's a SCMOD? And I don't remember what the acronym stood for, but... But yeah, it shows all of the things.
All the infringements.
There. Yeah.
Which I wrote down.
Oh, nice. Please.
I loved it. You please see the close-up on the SCMOD.
Yep. Does it have his date of birth on there? Because that would have been a good date for the movie count. I think I paused it and I don't think there was a date.
It put his name. All I wrote was the amount of infringements. It said 116 parking violations, 56 moving violations. That's it. And then at the end, it flashed
like arrest immediately.
Or hold license. Or
hold license and like detain.
That. Yeah. Yeah. That was funny. Yeah. I like it on the little mono colors screen that they've got in their little car. I mean, in 1980, to have a computer at all.
High
so
tech.
To have a computer in the car, that would have been, real high tech.
Yeah. You're not getting Twitter on that thing.
And it could search a database. How do you think it did that? Did they load it into every car
in
the
morning
at the beginning of every
there.
Shift? Maybe they had the internet before the rest of the world had it.
Maybe.
When did the internet
come out? The Chicago Police Department.
Well, it was a defense force thing. Maybe they put it out to the cops in Chicago.
Oh, we're getting all conspiracy theory now. Let's move away from this very quickly.
Internet beta. Yeah, lots of infringement. So not afraid to break the law. He's a follower. Yeah, but he's more of a supporter.
Yeah, he doesn't like get flustered or lose his cool. Neither of them really do.
Nah.
That's just the persona of them of just they don't go on an arc in the story whatsoever. No, like, they're the same characters at the beginning of the film as they are at the end, which is just makes for more humor. Like, they're literally there to do their mission.
Just as happy inside jail as they were outside of jail, still performing, happy to.
Yeah, they're all doing it together, as long as they're together with the band.
Aww, getting the band back together. Do you think that film, this film, is the first time we hear we're getting the band back together?
Yeah, I think so.
And it's become, well,
like this, it is
that kind
yeah.
of phrasing, because you hear that all the time. We're getting the band back together. That was what gave birth to that.
It would have, if it wasn't coined during this film, it's yeah. certainly this is what made it huge.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Like, when everyone says that, they're referencing the Blues Brothers.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Good. I'll go with that. I love that.
Yeah.
I do like picking out when we hear moments in the older films of, right, that has become a social norm. A
lot of Tarantino stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you go back and check out some of our Director December things, there's so many little quotes that happen in films. You're like, I wonder if that's the first time that was ever said.
Funny you say that, because Tarantino is mentioned in this film. Aha.
Tarantino is mentioned in the film.
Yep.
Well, while we're here, please.
Well, it's when, it might even be Elwood that says it. They go to find, it's when they find the rest of the band, and they go to one of the band members' house, and the lady who opens the door is Mrs. Tarantino.
Oh yeah, I did remember that. Yeah.
Mrs. Tarantino. And I just went, what? Yeah. I actually had to rewind it and had to, he's not mentioned, but it just happens to be the surname of the person.
Yeah, that is pretty fun. Yeah. Absolutely not in reference to Quentin Tarantino.
Why not? It could be that's the director nod. There we go. He likes to put directors in his film.
Yeah, but
12... I agree with you, Lee. Yep, that was one of them.
12 years later is when Reservoir Dogs came out, Tarantino's first film, so probably not.
Yeah, he would have been watching lots of them and known.
He would have been a teenager.
Quentin Tarantino.
No, but that is...
That's how you do bad jokes.
That is fun. Yeah, well, thank you for demonstrating a bad joke, Terrence. We appreciate you doing it every episode.
How good are their knuckle tats?
I love that. I love it so much. Yeah. Jake and Elwood.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
I think that's so cool. I love that. That's another thing that unites them. The brothers, the family feel that they've got.
Cool. Do you think that Dan Aykroyd knows how to play the harmonica?
Yeah. As long as you've got someone behind you that knows how to play it better.
I'm honestly asking. I don't know.
Probably. He's extremely talented. The fact that you've asked me, I think there's some memory I've got of watching something where he does break it out and starts playing. I don't know.
He might. He probably does. I don't know the answer to that question.
I think he does. And if I don't have proof of it, I wouldn't put it past him that he does know how. He's very talented. Yeah, like Steve Martin can banjo it up like nothing else.
He's great.
You know, so I reckon Dan Aykroyd can do it.
Another SNL alum.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a good era, that one. I wonder, but when did Eddie Murphy start? That's a whole other conversation.
I think he might have been in the same... Is that a garbage bin?
Yeah, someone's bringing really the bins in. It was bin night last night, so people are going to be bringing their bins in.
We are shooting early. Maybe we'll do some curtains or something.
That's people doing that, cleaning up the streets. It's music to my ears. Speaking of music, oh, the dog wasn't happy with that segue.
So nothing else with Elwood?
Nah, we'll dot him in around as we go. I'd love to love to jump into the music, specifically like the formation of the band, and then going through a few of just the set pieces of the songs that they do.
Yeah, okay.
And then maybe... talking about a favorite moment or song.
Yeah, okay.
Cool.
Well, that might have been too loud.
Yep. Sorry, I'm
very close to the mic.
Still haven't got a pop filter. I think I've been far away, so apologies if my voice hasn't been registered.
You're right, I'll fix it in post.
Thank you, I appreciate that. Just turn Lee's all the way up and turn yours all the way down.
Bloody hell, Lee, again. No, you're not far.
But no, them setting off on this mission to get the band back together. Who's the first person that they go to?
They go get the guys from the on the card that Mrs. Tarantino gives them, right?
Yeah,
they go to the lounge and see them playing.
So Donald Duck Dunn and
Duck Dunn, Steve Cropper, the key, I don't know many of the other names. Not Mr. Fabulous, he's
a little bit later.
But the bulk of the band they get. Mike right Guitar Murphy.
Yeah, is later.
He's in the diner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we get him, And then we get Mr. Fabulous.
Guitar, bass, keys, and a...
trombone?
Trombone.
No, not trombone, trumpet.
Trumpet?
Trumpet is Mr. Fabulous. And then we go and get the sax.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Fabulous.
And the and the whole band's back together, and they
except
go and play
for,
the...
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, Mr. Fabulous, and then they get the sax.
Sax for who?
They get the sax with Mike Murphy.
With Mike, yeah.
He's the cook.
Yep.
Or the short order cook.
Then they go and get at their first gig that they've got lined up. At Bob's Country Bunker.
Oh, but they know before that, they've got to get their gear. So they go to Ray's Music Emporium.
Ah, yes.
So then we see Ray Charles. And this is, you know, when we see James Brown, even as a kid, I knew who James Brown was. And I just was, not gobsmacked, but I felt so proud.
Being Ray Charles.
Being able to recognize James Brown before when they realized their mission. And I was like, oh, they've got a famous singer in this movie. And then going to Ray Charles, I knew of Ray Charles as well.
Didn't recognize Cab Calloway.
Like, man, no, I didn't recognize Cab Calloway at all. But then Ray, and I was like, oh man, that's cool. And I'd heard John Lee Hooker's songs too and recognized his voice, but didn't know who he was. So it was nice to discover that later in life and realizing all these artists that were in it. But yeah, Ray Charles. Can we talk Ray Charles quickly?
Please.
How he...
Or slowly.
Catches the kid trying to steal the guitar with a shotgun.
Yeah, he's a hand, so little, good. Little handgun.
So good. Oh, was it a handgun?
Yeah, yeah.
Man, I don't know. Every gun, you know my record with guns. Yeah, all right.
It's so sad to see a boy that young going bad.
So good. Yeah, oh, lovely joke. Lovely joke. No, I was going to put my sunnies on. Why would I do that? I loved it. And then they get him to play, get him to sing.
Yeah, well, they don't. They want to buy the piano, but they're trying to get it at a discount.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they're like, I don't think there's no life in these keys. He's like, oh, I beg to differ. I reckon we got some life left in here. And then, yeah, sits down and does Shake Your Tail Feather.
Cool.
So good.
And that's the first song, I think, that we have that actually plays a part in the storytelling. In terms of
them getting the equipment
and the world
and stuff.
Going into dance.
Yeah, well, it happens at the church.
Yeah, but it's in a church.
Yeah,
and
but people aren't
there's
doing
gospel
flips
singers,
and, yeah,
okay. And they're dancing. It's music, and people are feeling it, and they're in the mood, and they're dancing.
Yeah, but this also one, in the diner with Think as well, Aretha Franklin.
Yeah, and that one happens after. Yeah, does it happen after?
That's before.
No, that is before. Okay, so this wasn't the first one. Yeah, in the diner. And by the way, one of Aretha's backup singers, who is one of the two or three ladies that are sitting at the counter in the diner, is Aretha's sister, who often would perform with her as a backup singer and has helped her write a couple of tracks as well.
I didn't know that.
Just a bit of FYI.
That's a fun little fact.
Yes.
I've apparently, some of the performers, the singers, weren't good at like lip syncing their own music because they're musicians, right? They want to perform their own songs, but they can't do it live.
Okay.
Because it's just a nightmare of sound and... Yeah. Timing, and it's horrible, so they had to lip sync a lot of their songs, and apparently Aretha Franklin wasn't that great at it. And so they were able to kind of piece it together by just stitching together very quickly rapid cuts, and if you watch that scene, it's very quickly edited around her mouthing the lyrics to her own song.
They had to
because she's it. Because she normally, you know, being a proper musician, she never sings the same song the same way twice. Like, it's just always inventing and changing and making it better. And So, to do it the way that it was recorded is just not an easy thing to do. James Brown apparently had the same thing. But he was able to sing. So much so that they just let him sing his live.
Oh, that's so cool.
In the church, that is James Brown singing that song.
That's a real performance.
Yeah, the background song. Like, sorry, the... What are they called?
The gospel choir.
Yeah, that was pre-recorded. He was singing live to a pre-recorded background singing.
That's awesome. There's another cameo in that. Chaka Khan is part of the gospel choir.
I don't know who that
She's still around. She's still laying tracks down. Is that how musicians talk? Lay down tracks? I think it is.
Not a musician. But yeah, James Brown. And then we go to John Lee Hooker in the street, which again, sang all of his stuff live. In the street, just hearing him come in with that boom, 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 boom is just, it sends chills down my spine. He's such a good, a good performer. Mm-hmm. Seek out some of his music if you haven't listened to it. And yeah, Aretha Franklin then jumps in with Think. Magical voice, just beautiful.
At the end of this film, they do the credits and do the the artists that performed, and they're all singing the one song. I can't even remember the song that they sing at the end. Jailhouse Rock.
Yes, Jailhouse Rock.
And when they cut to Aretha, her, you say her register, her volume is so huge that it clips in the sound. It crackles in the audio just a little bit, and you can tell they tried to fix it.
It's so powerful.
It would have been too loud for their microphones. And she's just singing normally, but it would have been incredible. I would have loved to have seen her live, been in the same room as her just to hear her voice. There would have been few occasions where she needed to mic up, apart from stadium performances, you know, just or mic up like anyone else. You'd never need to sing into a microphone.
If you want to hear Aretha sing live, there is a great film of her just doing a series of gospel songs in a church recorded. It'll blow your brains out. It's incredible. I'll share it with you when we finish recording.
That'd be really cool. So sad the day that I heard that she'd passed. That was I won't say it was similar to some other ones, but I do, you know, I remember the outpouring of grief. I heard it on the radio and there were so many calls. It was just unbelievable and such a powerful model for women in music, but just in life, and just unbelievable. Just while we're talking about her, it was so cool to watch her in this. So young, so powerful.
Yeah.
Just what she means to the world, you know?
Absolutely fierce.
Yeah.
Just an incredible person.
Yeah.
And then, we get Ray Charles doing Shake Your Tail Feather, mm-hmm. Which we talked about a little bit.
Great fun track.
And then we get to, I know, one of your favorites, Cab Calloway doing Minnie the Moocher.
Minnie the Moocher. I learned all the words to this when I was like 11.
Even the scatting.
Yeah.
The scatting the right?
I could do that. I can't do it now.
The whole thing at the end.
But the back and forth with the crowd. And this is something that, again, to my dad, we would watch the film and then he was part of a trade exchange program with small businesses where we lived and with a barter card system and everything. It was a full legitimate thing that was running. And someone gave him a whole collection of CDs. And one of the CDs was the Blues Brothers soundtrack. So I grabbed this and we just played this together and it was just on loop. And the full Minnie the Moocher song was on it. And you don't hear the full song in the movie. You just hear the first verse. And then the ending of the song as Jake and Elle would creep into the theater
slowly
and break in through the ladies' toilets. And, you know, but I used to know all the words. And as a kid singing this, I felt so proud and no one knew what on earth I was doing, especially with the scatting. And I would do my own call and response and pretend to be the crowd. Anyway.
Oh, that's really cool.
Just putting that out there as well. I love that scene. I love that song.
Yeah, that's fun. There's a few songs that the Blues Brothers themselves sing.
Yeah.
The first time that they ever stand in front of a microphone and sing, they get cut off because they're in the Bob's Country Bunker. And which again, we're going to talk about in What About When very soon. Where they start singing Gimme Some Lovin'.
Yep.
And they just lights out, smash bottles through the chicken wire. They're like, oh gosh, then we're off. And then they do Rawhide, which was
so cool.
So much fun to see.
So good.
Followed by Stand By Your Man.
Beautiful, the two boys singing that song.
Everyone crying.
Sometimes it's hard to be a woman.
And then Somebody to Love in the finale. And then finishing with Jailhouse Rock.
Yeah. Wow, you must have written those down.
That was all off the top of my head, but I don't know what you're talking about. Actually, that's a joke that you normally do. I shouldn't do that. Out of those set pieces and those songs, do you have anything that's most memorable, favorite, maybe to listen to? That was a really nice story that you told about Minnie the Moocher.
Minnie the Moocher, but I do. And it's a What About When, but I mentioned it now, the Bob's, what's the
Country
called?
Bunker.
Bob's Country Bunker, when they're pretending to be the good old boys. Just that whole scene, the whole song, the whole idea that they get these bottles thrown at them because they hate them. And then when they sing a real banger, that's what the kids say these days, right? When they sing this great song, bottles still come at them even harder.
Yeah. Woo! Celebratory smashing so bottles. Good. Again, another one of the invincibility tropes of them just glass smashing their faces. Yeah. And they're fine. It's all fine.
And how well timed is it right at the end when he thanks them and he gets, and Elwood gets this bottle?
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. So I wonder if that was set to splash all over him.
Maybe.
I don't think it was. I think it was just like keep chucking him, and they wouldn't have known the camera was tight on him at that point. And he just, as the pro, you know, just roll with it.
Yeah.
You gotta roll with it. The camera's rolling. They're shooting on film. This stuff is expensive.
Yeah.
You keep going until you're told to stop. Stay in character. We didn't yell cut yet. And that whole scene, you know, how they get away with it at the end, how Jake says, oh, I'm just going to write up a check. Usually I go into the car and I
we're doing sit on the what thing. About when's very soon.
Yeah, you asked. All right, but I love that. Minnie the Moocher. I think that's it, except for the way that they're received by the audience when they finally come on stage.
That's mine. So Somebody to Love. I used to sing that so much as a kid, to the point where there's a chant that they start singing during the song at the end. I need you, you.
Yeah.
Where I would, at the start of the song, I would do that chant in the background to see if it lined up with them Ooh. Saying, I need you. And of course it did, because that's how music works. Yeah. But I didn't know that as a kid. So I would sit there and they're singing the song and I'm going, I need you. You with the beat, and then when the crowd started and it linked up with me, I was almost angry. I was like, "Oh, I thought I was going to catch them in a lie here," but no, that's not how music works. But for me, yeah, that whole set piece in that concert hall, is my favorite. I love it.
Isn't it so cool how much this film kind of captures you in the way that you have this anticipation. But not just anticipating something to happen, but there's a what's it called when you're involved? Participation. You're actively participating as an audience member in a film. You know, in the comfort of your own home, probably. I don't think you would have gone to the cinemas when this is out.
No, I was not. I haven't seen this in the cinema. I've seen a few retro films that were made before I was born in the cinema, but this is not one of them.
Well, look, next level to that would be when your cinema does special screenings of cult classics and everyone goes dresses up and everyone speaks every line and does the jokes and does the songs and performs at the same time. You know, that's next level to that. But to be so participatory as an audience member in your own front of your own TV is just beautiful. And that's testament to, I think, what the film was able to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well said. Do you have anything that you wanted to talk about before we get into What About When? We should probably mention, we'll do a little cheeky cameos.
All right.
Cameos bit, because there are heaps,
mm-hmm.
so many
mm-hmm.
glorious cameos in the film.
I am looking through my little notes now and trying to skip past the What About When moments, but I've got a few funny moments in the film that are not necessarily What About When's.
Well, I'll quickly do some great cameos. Obviously, there's John Candy.
Yeah.
Incredible. I almost just said the one that we've got for the end.
Frank Oz.
Frank Oz, we mentioned at the beginning.
Yeah.
Carrie Fisher is in here playing the ex-fiance of Jake Blues.
What a cool little side story to everything. And you get these tiny little snippets along the way. But you only really see when she's in the curls and what's it called? What's the
curl
salon?
Up and dye.
Curl up and dye salon. Where in the background you see the photos that she has up. How she's not over him yet.
Yeah.
Photos of them together. Yeah, that's cool.
We're like Twiggy.
Who else we got? Oh yeah, of course. Oh, how cool is that? And she's waiting by the hotel for him.
Yeah, waits for him.
Elwood.
Yeah. Yeah, horrible. As well as any single person who was worthy of holding a musical instrument at that time is in this film.
Yeah.
Like James Brown, Aretha Franklin, Cab Calloway, everyone.
All of the band.
Yep.
All of the band. Most of the band were also part of the Bar Keys, part of the Stax Records.
Ray Charles.
Group. And wrote so many. That band has actually written so much music. Everyone watching this would know at least 10 of their songs. Go look them up. You could just look at the Blues Brothers Band and type in a couple of the performers. We've mentioned a couple, Donald Duck Dunn, Steve Cropper. Those two appear in all of these tracks. Worked a lot with Otis Redding, Sam and Dave, so Sam Cooke. All that ilk. Unbelievable, amazing musicians in this film.
Yeah, this film is a great celebration of music of the time.
Yeah, yeah. Couple of funnies. Not What About When's, but funnies. How awesome is it that Elwood carries around this bag for whatever reason? He's just got all these odds and ends in it. He has lots of aerosols. So he has a random can of Cheese Whiz. when he walks into his apartment.
Get my cheese whiz, boy.
Get my cheese. And he just grabs out his bag, chucks it at him. He's got the marine epoxy, the marine grade glue.
Strong stuff.
Puts on the old boy's accelerator pedal. And then he has another, it's a different aerosol can, which he uses to light fire to the electrics in the elevator. That's at the right. end. So he's got three aerosols, not to mention the push action screwdriver that he's got with his long extension bit. It's a handy little gadget case. Mary Poppins bag, if you like, of tricks that he has. And I like all those little things. The way that Carrie Fisher tries to kill him all the time is hilarious. Another cameo, Paul Rubens.
Oh, yes.
Pee-wee Herman as the maitre d'. Or not the maitre d', because that's who Mr. Fantastic is.
But Fabulous.
As Mr. Fabulous. Who's Mr. Fantastic? He's
a Fantastic Four character.
Woo! But yeah, Pee-wee Herman coming in there. Iconic. The guy playing the sax, I don't know his name, walking on the counter of the diner. An iconic shot, how he's playing... walking like that,
wearing the apron.
Oh, so good. I love how they sing "Sometimes It's Hard to Be a Woman." I just think that that's just hilarious, and how they all the crowd gets into that.
Yeah,
crying and hugging holding each other.
The gentleman in the bar just by himself, holding onto his beer, crying into it, taking a sip.
yep. 71 stunt people in this film. Huge amount. 10 helicopter pilots and cameramen.
Most of them would have been drivers.
Yes. Well, yeah, absolutely. I noticed in the credits, there was a credit that said God Music by Elmer Bernstein. I don't know what that was. It just said God Music by Elmer Bernstein.
Sure.
The title design, Stinky Levitsky. Thought that was hilarious. And right at the end, there's a when in Hollywood, visit Universal Studios, ask for Babs.
Yes.
Do you have something about that?
I had a piece of trivia written down, and I don't have it now. It's probably going to take me too long to find.
Okay.
But yeah, have a look at Ask for Babs, because there is a story behind that.
Okay, good.
I don't know what it is off the top of my head.
Good, but look, that I wanted to mention those because I think they're really cool things to see, cool things to call out. That they're nice little things that make this world as fun as it is.
Yeah. But, I've got a couple of fun pieces of trivia from the making of the film
that I was able to find. Good, I'd love to hear.
So one of them is that apparently during some time during filming, John Belushi just disappeared and they couldn't find him. And so Dan Aykroyd went and noticed a house that had lights on. They filmed a lot at night.
Yeah.
And just found a house with lights on. And so I went and knocked on the door and was just going to ask, hey, just wondering if you've seen a guy? John Belushi. And the person answered the door and said, are you here for John Belushi? And he went, yep. It's like, oh, he invited himself in, asked for a glass of milk and a sandwich, and he's just crashed on the couch. And he was asleep on the couch. And so Dan Aykroyd just dubbed him from that moment on as America's Guest. So John Belushi is known as America's Guest.
That's really cool.
It was really sweet, right?
That's really sweet.
He was also had a different nickname by the crew and the director of the film, which is called the Black Hole, because he would constantly... lose his sunglasses. And it wouldn't even be like day to day. It would be like they would do a take and they would reset and they'd be like, where are your glasses? And they'd be like, oh, I don't know, I lost them. Like, you just had them on. So they went through something like 100 pairs of Ray-Bans or something for the film. Yeah, of just John Belushi's.
Man. Well, back then, Ray-Bans probably weren't that expensive. They were just sunnies that everyone wore. Now they're an exclusive item.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, he'd literally lose pairs in between filming. Between takes. Yeah, between takes. So good. We talked about the elevated train.
Yes.
Do you remember... I've got that as a what about when. Don't worry about that.
Okay. Oh, cicadas have just come out. Or crickets.
Dan Aykroyd's original script was 300 and something pages long.
Wow.
Which was insane. 324 pages long, with John Landis took 3 weeks to chip it down to what it is.
Had he written a film before this?
Oh, probably.
He was big. He wrote Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
He was going to charge cast Belushi for this, but unfortunately he died just before they started recording.
And that had to go, his character went to
Bill Murray,
the fantastic and mm-hmm. yeah, and again, irreplaceable Bill Murray.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Talk about America's guest. Bill Murray is now America's guest.
Yeah, absolutely. He's an amazing man. He is welcome into my home anytime.
Exactly. I would love to move into, our hashtag What About Whens.
Yep.
Yes, please and thank you. If you want to contribute to this section or at any point during any of the episodes, this is a good one to do it. Best ways are Twitter or Instagram. We are at The Movie Cal. Make sure you use the hashtag WhatAboutWhen so that we can find your comment or tweet, or leave them down below if you're on YouTube.
Yep.
I completely lost my train of thought.
You can also send us an email, which is themoviecal@gmail.com. That's great for longer explanations of things. And we have our website as well, which is themoviecalendar.com. Yeah. And let's now get into some What About Whens.
Yeah, all of these are in the description below. So here we are. This is episode 31, The Blues Brothers. Yeah. For hashtag What About When. So we don't have any contributions this week, but that is completely okay because we have our own. Terrence, do you want to kick us off with our first hashtag What About When?
What about when Jake and Elwood have the conversation with the guy that owns the big theater at the end, and they're in the steam room and they're having this kind of good back and forth. Come on. Okay, I know this room. That's it. Okay, come on, guys. And we find out that the entire band is in the steam room with them. Hilarious.
Yeah,
I just remembered that one. Usually we share our What About Whens beforehand, but that just came to mind. I broke out laughing with that one.
That's good. I'm probably going to do a couple more that I don't have written down. So yeah, I have my first one is what about when they go to get Mr. Fabulous at the restaurant, and they just be themselves inside the restaurant to try and get Mr. Fabulous back. And it is probably one of the funniest scenes in the entire film for me.
How much for the women?
Yeah. How much for the your wife, your children. I want to buy your children.
What absolute slobs.
Yeah.
That's so good. And he just gives up at the end and cracks the champagne for himself, Mr. Fabulous. Like, yeah, no.
No, it was already popped. He grabbed the bottle and saw that it was empty and was just like, I'm out of here. If you don't, if you say no, we will come here for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day of the week.
I have a what about when the entire Good Old Boys scene that we spoke about earlier. Unbelievable. Chicken wire singing, Rawhide goes off. Amazing.
Cracking the whip.
Cracking, he looks on the wall, sees the whip. Oh, I might use that.
Yeah!
They got the great back and forth. Get him up.
Get him up.
So good. Move so good.
On. Rawhide. Yeah, that's fantastic. So the one that I was going to mention in the trivia piece before is hashtag what about when they drive a car 118 miles per hour underneath the elevated train in Chicago. That shot of the car flying through the street that looks like it's been sped up because it's going so fast. It's not sped up. They actually drove it that quickly through the streets. It was ridiculous.
They had a camera mounted under the front of a car. I'm guessing it was a different car, a camera car. Speeding through, and when the camera is low to the ground, it looks like it's going faster. So maybe for that, they weren't going so fast because they had camera.
But when you see the car go, they actually had to do it twice because when they watched it back, it looked fake. It was going so quick, it looked fake. So then they did it again with pedestrians in the shot, like with the stunt people.
Yeah.
In the you'd shot hope. To like walk around so that you could see them moving and the car going.
To give it some...
To make it look more real.
Some relative...
Yeah.
Wow.
Insane how quickly they were able to do it. The city of Chicago really did this movie a solid by allowing them to do some of the stuff they did.
Yeah, that's nuts. Imagine if something just went bad and they hit one of those supporting struts for the train.
They probably...
I mean, they'd kill themselves.
Yeah.
But, you know... That was crazy. Yeah, the shot with the car, with the camera low on the car. You see a car come in on the side and they have to veer around it. Yeah. They're running red lights. I thought, no way did they cut off all these streets. But yeah, if the city of Chicago was really complicit with the making of this film, which you should always be. If you're a filmmaker and you're filming out on the road, you need council approval.
Yes, Quentin Tarantino making Reservoir Dogs.
With firing guns and chasing people down the middle of the road. Okay, cool. Minnie the Moocher is another about what about when. We've spoken about that. But what about when in the car chase at the end, when they drive to the end of the bridge, realize they can't go any further, so they reverse and hit something that makes them do this beautiful backflip 180 to land again and drive away clean.
Yeah. Amazing stunt work there from those drivers.
Incredible driving work. Such skill. Such skill.
That was hilarious. Mm. Again, breaking physics.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
You watch this and you're like, wait a second.
We mentioned it in the full episode, but yeah, hashtag what about when anytime Carrie Fisher shows up to shoot something or blast them out of the sky or something, and they all just get up and dust themselves off and away they go.
And she gets totally duped by Jake, totally suckers her in with his little whatever his sob story. The first time we see him without his glasses, right?
Yeah.
Do we see any of them without their glasses?
No, he's the only one.
Oh, I love how he's got this poo smear on his forehead. Probably not poo, it's just mud. I don't know. But he's such a snake. Such a horrible, bad dude.
Horrible person.
And just that totally flips her. She's like, oh.
And then kisses her. Dumps her. Okay, let's go. She's disarmed now. We can leave. Leading to one of the greatest quotes in cinematic history.
Yeah.
When they get in the car and they're about to head back to Chicago. And they say the famous line, I don't have it written down.
Man, I don't even know what you're going to talk about. I'm thinking we're on a mission from God.
Well, that is one.
Okay, yeah.
I'm gonna butcher it. But it's the quote where they're like, so we got half a pack of cigarettes, a full tank of gas, it's dark. Oh, it's this many miles to Chicago, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it. And then off they go.
Ooh.
Don't remember the exact quote, but it is iconic.
Okay, that's cool. Well, that icon is not me. Met my register.
Oh, it's so good.
That's really cool. I think I remember trying to calculate that. I think it's 180 miles or something.
Yeah.
I'm going, wow, how bad are the roads that it takes them right through the night to drive that far? I mean, it's 180 miles here in Australia. We do things with kilometers, and a mile is 1.6 kilometers, so it's a bit more than...
And I don't know how to math, so...
I don't know math
either. It's probably like 1,000 kilometers.
You're an idiot. That's hilarious.
You know, something's funny when someone says that's really funny.
What about the shot at the end where they finally catch them and
all the
military, the guns, the security are all pointed to them like they're magnet shards, and all it's like someone's held like a science experiment and all the guns are pointed perfectly at them. Is a shot to be celebrated.
Yeah.
I love that.
But they got the money. They got the money they achieved their goal, and they got the money to the orphanage.
And that clerk, who is still unnamed, is standing at the apex of all of the pointed guns going like this, pointing at them.
Yeah.
If you notice in that shot, they're dobbing them right in.
Here's a list of the few of the people that are chasing the Blues Brothers at the end of the film after everything they've been through. So we've got the police officers from the mall chase.
Oh, yeah.
So if it's the last thing I do, I'm going to catch those those sons of bees.
Yeah, he's the first cop who, you know, pulls him for the parking infringement.
We've got the Nazis, which is they are the America's Socialist White People Party, or ASWPP, or Asswipe.
Yep. Yeah,
which I love. The good old boys and Bob are all chasing them as well. Carrie Fisher, the entire Illinois Police Department with John Candy, and the Illinois Bureau of Investigation are all chasing them at the end of the film.
And does the SWAT team count as part of the police?
That's the Bureau, yeah. No, that's the Illinois Bureau of Investigation.
And the Army, you mentioned them, right?
Yeah, it's
with everyone. Helicopters
the entire
tanks.
The country is chasing them down.
I love watching in big street scenes. I love seeing in the distance crowds that are cordoned off because they've closed off the street. I love it. And you could just see... They've done really well with this, by the way, to portion off, and you can see crowds of people standing there.
Yeah, they must have had a good budget.
Oh, so good, but so satisfying to see that. And I always love thinking, oh, I wish I was walking down the street that day because I would have been put on the side of the road and would have been able to watch this piece of history, which, by the way, I was able to see live when they were shooting certain scenes in the first Matrix movie.
I was witness to
some of those. I was in Sydney at the time, yes. But we'll talk about those sometime in the future.
We will definitely talk about The Matrix at some point. You know, I don't know what budget this movie was made on.
10, I think.
But
10.
10? Yeah, probably.
Or 1,000 miles.
But it made next to no money.
What?
Like, it wasn't very popular. Yeah, it came out...
Why are we talking about it then?
It came out the same week as Something Massive. Or am I thinking of a different film?
Doesn't matter. 1980.
Yeah.
Was it Star Wars?
No, it wasn't.
It's like the only
film. Oh, it might have been, actually. Yeah.
That came out in 78.
No, 77 was the first Star Wars, but in 80 might have been Empire Strikes Back.
Ooh.
I think it might have come out on the same day as Empire.
Can you imagine releasing a film that's like based on a comedy thing that you used to do on Saturday Night Live, and you find out opening weekend, oh, we're also sharing the stage with a Star Wars sequel.
Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah, no problem. We'll be fine.
That's
we'll
a bad idea.
Anyone just recently bought a house? Sorry. You're going to lose the house.
But it obviously became cult.
Oh, yeah.
Cult after after many years and getting picked up, becoming iconic. Do you have any other hashtag what about wins? Because I have none. I'm done.
I had one more thing I wanted to say, but I can't even remember what it was, so it's not gonna make it into the episode. It's fine.
If we've forgotten anything, we apologize. Thank you for playing along this whole way, but it is time now to add the film to the movie calendar, the moment you have all been waiting for. We do have an honorable mention date first. Did mm-hmm. you were you able to look it up during the time that we were recording?
Yeah. Am I still on that screen? No. Yes.
Should we do the date, or should we wait and do the honorable mention first?
Damn, I did just lose it. Here we go. No, here is the honorable mention. The honorable mention is, and anyone watching this episode who's got this far has probably seen the movie and may already know, if you're an absolute fan of it, that there is, if not a petition to get this done, a Blues Brothers Day. Blues Brothers Day falls on the date that the film was initially released. And that date is June 20.
June's getting pretty full already on the calendar.
It is. I'm starting to see a pattern as to why a lot of these films have our calendar day as that being the day of release. Seems like a popular season to release a film.
It used to be, yeah, very much so.
But that's an honourable mention date.
Yeah, so the date that we have chosen for 1980's Blues Brothers is August 9th. Checking to make sure I read that correctly. Yes, I did. And the reason why we have chosen that date is because that is the date that they finally achieve their mission from God and get the money signed off to the orphanage. And the way you know it is because that is the date that is signed on the check at the end by none other than the famous cameo that we haven't mentioned yet.
Steven Spielberg. Mind blown.
It blew my mind that was Steven Spielberg. I had no idea. I haven't really seen much footage of him from that era, like that Jaws era.
Yeah.
And so, like, all I know is what he looks like now. And yeah, I had no idea. But, like, you can, once you know it's him and you look at him, you 100% see that it is none other than the incredible director himself, Steven Spielberg.
It was pretty crazy seeing him in this really cool role.
Yeah.
Such a cool cameo. He's not wearing his cap. Maybe that's why you didn't.
That's why I didn't recognize him. He was indoors. He was doing a clerk job. No hats allowed.
And they turn up to the office and it says back in 5 minutes. That is just brilliant writing.
Kicking the
tail. Brilliant writing. They go through this whole thing.
Waiting in the elevator as it like slowly goes up, all the SWAT teams coming to get them.
Girl from Ipanema playing in the background.
Yeah.
Another song that I know all the lyrics to, by the way.
Yeah, so good.
I'll sing it to you one day, Lee. Maybe when you ask me to riff again while you're picking something up, I'll break out into song.
I must have got my notes confused, because when I wrote the date down here, I wrote August 9th, the signing of the check for 69 cents.
No, but that's a different film.
Yeah, that is a different film. There's a different date on that check. That is for, the Big Lebowski, which we are going to be filming next week. So make sure you come back for the Big Lebowski. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you for listening. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe, leave us a like. It's free. And it really helps us out. Terrence, do you have anything that you would like to say before we end? No, he's in stunned silence at my amazing ending of the show. Thank you very much for watching and or listening. Thank you, Terrence, for recording.
Thanks, Lee. This was awesome.
And we will see you next week for The Big Lebowski. Cool.